Dennis Lehane's latest novel, The Given Day, may surprise his longtime fans. After a string of 7 crime novels, including Mystic River and Gone Baby Gone, which were also made into award-winning films, he's written a sprawling historical epic that's set during the Boston police strike at the end of World War I and features real-life characters like Babe Ruth, Calvin Coolidge, and J. Edgar Hoover, who's John Hoover in those days. It's published by William Morrow, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Dennis Lehane back to the show today. Hi.
Hi.
What led you to write a historical novel? Is this a book that you've been thinking about writing for a long time?
The Boston police strike is something that was certainly part of Boston lore, if you will, growing up. You always heard about it. So as I grew older, I began to think just about a simple fact that I'd always just commonly accepted, which was that the entire police department walked off the job.
Has any police department ever done that?
Not in the United States. Mm-hmm. Not in the United States. Montreal had done it just before the Boston police strike, actually a few months, and Liverpool had done it the same year. But the Boston police strike was, if you would, the acid test for the United States, and it became a very galvanizing event. From that point on, emergency personnel in the United States were barred from ever striking. It became just, and it was in the 19. It wasn't until the 1980s that the question even arose again, and that was when Reagan invoked the Boston police strike to fire the air traffic controllers. So, I'd looked into the event a little bit, and then around 2002, I came across this one little fact that made me say, I need to go deeper, which was that there was a charge of the 7th Cavalry down Beacon Hill into Scully Square, which is a part of Boston. And that just blew my mind. There was no other way to put it. The bugles, the whole John Ford ethos rolling down 20th century Boston.
But it was a time, a time when a lot was going on, and you could see where people might take drastic measures. I mean, we're talking about a time when people are concerned about Bolsheviks and mm-hmm. anarchists. The prohibition has created a certain amount of criminal activity. World War I is still going on. The Spanish flu epidemic yeah. has affected the country. There's the Black Sox scandal that had rocked American sports.
Well, that was coming. Yeah, that was all coming. I mean,
then the beginning of the NAACP. So this is a very exciting time.
It was an utterly invigorating time. There's no other way to look at it. I mean, it was terribly terrifying time, and there was a lot of strife. There was 2,000 labor strikes in the year 1919 alone.
You even include the Boston Molasses Disaster of 1919.
Yeah, January 1919.
What was that?
The Boston Molasses Disaster was the a molasses tank that was being converted from industrial to commercial purposes exploded in the north end of Boston, which was the ghetto of the time. And it sent, this is not a lie, it sent 50-foot waves of molasses down through the center of the north end. It killed 16 people. Did massive destruction to buildings, a railroad trestle, picked a fire station up and threw it across a block, threw it across a city square. It was one heck of a calamitous incident.
I've always thought molasses was dangerous because it made you fat. I didn't know it could kill you as well.
Yeah. So I'd originally thought I was going to start the book there and wrote pretty extensive chapters of the molasses flood and then pulled it out and one of the late drafts. So now it's just something that Babe Ruth is fascinated with, and he reads about it.
Well, Babe Ruth is here, too, and I'll get to that in a moment. How much is based on research, and how much did you invent? Because I read, for example, the Boston Molasses Disaster. I thought, gee, he had to have made that one up.
No. Any event that is – this is a weird it's a weird line. I'm not exactly even sure where the line is etched, but I would say that any event that I present to the reader as true is true. If I say there was a molasses flood, there was a molasses flood. If I say there was a May Day riot in Boston on May 1st, there was a May Day riot.
What about the things involving real-life characters like Babe Ruth, who pops up throughout the book? Is there a responsibility to do more research when you're writing about historical figures than when you're creating fictional characters?
I don't think so. I think that we have an acceptance that factual characters in fictional novels are as fictional as the factual. I mean, as fictional as the fictional characters, if you will. They're mimeos. They're not the actual character, or the actual person by any means. So the Ruth that I imagined is in some way, shape, or form my Ruth.
And you have a story about the Boston Red Sox traveling at the beginning of the book. They and the Chicago Cubs are in the middle of the 1918 World Series. The Sox are traveling from Chicago to Boston, and they get into a game with a Negro League team in Ohio.
That part did not happen. What happened was that the Chicago Cubs and the Red Sox were on a train together, and it was there that they realized they were being shafted on their World Series money, and they would end up striking, refusing to come out for Game 5 of the World Series, which caused a riot. And that was the story I started to tell. And then,
so we have two major strikes here, a baseball strike.
Yeah, a baseball strike starts the book. And then culminates in the Boston police strike.
One element that you've retained from your previous novels is your setting, the city of Boston. You grew up there, and I'm assuming it's the place you feel most comfortable writing about. But when you were writing for The Wire, was Baltimore an easy transition? Are they similar?
Yeah, Baltimore wasn't hard, because what I'm writing about on some level, the commonalities to all my books tends to be an urban setting, definitely a look at those sort of, the urban ethos. And then secondly would be, thematically, I always come back to class warfare and the battle between haves and have-nots. That's The Wire, I would leave gaps in my scripts when it came to take a right on something street, and they'd fill it in. But no, for the most part, I think every now and then some colloquialism would change. There's a different way they say it in Baltimore. But that was about it.
My guest is Dennis Lehane, whose latest novel is The Given Day. It's published by William Morrow. There are two main characters here.
Yep.
Much of the focus is on the Coughlin family, and particularly Danny Coughlin, who's a young patrolman whose father is an influential police captain. And I'm assuming that the Boston police force was mainly Irish-American in those days.
It was mostly Irish and Irish-American, yeah.
Because that was a quick route to assimilation?
It was, and it was also just when the Irish got it, when the generation before this generation got in, they held on strong, and they made it their own little fiefdom. So the Boston police became a lot of people got their jobs through patronage. And then what happened for the Boston police strike was that it was 90% Irish Democrat. And it was very much run by the ward bosses, who were Irish Democrats. And then
it was politics and the police force that the Irish really did well in Boston.
Yes.
And New York to some degree as well.
And then the police commissioner that they had replaced, the one who died, turned out to be a very staunch Brahmin Republican who had once been mayor of the city 20 years before and had been destroyed by the Democratic wards. So he hated Democrats and he hated the Irish. So when the Irish policemen came to him complaining of shoddy treatment, they weren't exactly getting a compassionate ear.
Well, the working conditions you describe here are horrific. For example, Danny and his partner have to collect corpses during the flu epidemic. And when his partner falls ill, he loses his job with no pension or disability. There were no benefits for cops.
There's no nets. I mean, there was we can't imagine the world pre-union, but it was very recent and it was very stark.
And this is about the formation of a policeman's union.
Yes.
Danny is sent by his father to infiltrate it to find out what's going on. It was euphemistically called the Boston Social Club. Was it because it had begun as a social club, or?
Yes, and they wouldn't allow them to call it a union, so they had to call it a social club. They wouldn't allow them to have a union. So what we see now, each police department in every city having a policeman's union, that was a direct outgrowth of the Boston police strike. Until then, they weren't allowed to affiliate with any union on a national or local scale. So they had to call themselves social clubs. So it's the Boston Social Club, and that was that. That's what Danny
and the euphemism was something that everybody accepted. Or would, did
it was the official name? Fooled? No, it was the official name. It was the official name of the group, and everybody knew it was the union per se, but the union had no power, and it had no teeth, so they didn't mind letting them be social.
You also take us inside a hospital filled with Spanish flu victims. And a police station as it's being bombed, the homes of South Boston Irish, Italian immigrants in the North End, pool halls in Tulsa. How much of a challenge was it for you to create dialogue for all those different milieus, conversations that sound realistic for the time that you're writing about, but also will ring true for contemporary readers?
It wasn't terribly hard. I'm not saying that it wasn't, that in the end I had to pull words out that didn't exist then. Which I had to lose one of my all-time favorite cuss words. That was very sad because it didn't exist before 1950. But for the most part, I wrote freely and then went back and looked for anachronisms. And I literally had a friend who's very good this way go through the entire manuscript and just put A, the letter A, for anachronism, wherever he found something that rang tonally off. So that it wasn't as difficult. I think every writer is born with at least one gift. Some writers, a Martin Amis, probably born with three. The rest you have to work for. I was born with an ear. So I've always just had a good sense of tone.
You are also helped, I imagine, by the fact that Boston hasn't changed as much as many cities.
No.
And neighborhoods that once were Irish pretty much remain Irish.
Oh, no, no. Like, for example, the neighborhood I grew up in, which was Irish-Polish, is now mostly Vietnamese Thai. I mean, Boston has changed. Some areas have stuck, though. The North End is still predominantly Italian. But we've definitely had a shift in the immigrant status of neighborhoods. What's strange is that they still stay a little bit Balkanized. So that a neighborhood that was Irish is now Vietnamese, but it's Vietnamese. It's not mixed up. So, or a neighborhood that was, predominantly Lithuanian is now Brazilian, etc.
Boston, despite being one of the most liberal cities in the country, has also had a troubled racial past.
Yes.
And we talked about that game between the Boston Red Sox when Babe Ruth was with the team before
right. He
was traded to the Yanks. And it allowed you to introduce the other main character of the novel, Luther Lawrence, who's a young black ball player who winds up in Boston. Now, he has killed a gangster in Tulsa. Comes involved with the Coughlin family. Would that trajectory have been unusual at the time, Ohio to Tulsa to Boston?
Yes, yes. It would have been. One of the reasons Luther ends up in Boston is because Boston had a very, very tiny black population at that point, and the black population it did had was a gentrified black population. So it did not have the sort of migrant movement of poor blacks from the South didn't reach Boston at that point. So Luther ends up in Boston because it's about the only place he can hide. It's the only place he wouldn't be recognized by people who have contacts with the black mobster that he shot.
What kind of job could he have gotten in Boston at that time?
He ends up getting a job first as a houseman, and then later he works in the stockyards. We actually had a rather large, not Chicago scale, but we had a reasonably large cattle industry at that point.
So. Was the police strike covered well in the newspapers at the time? I mean, you have details here. They're paid 25 cents an hour, which I don't know what that meant in the economy of the day, but it sounds like not much. They had to buy their own bullets and their own uniforms.
Yeah, and fix them if they got torn. They worked 20 days before they got a day off. They had to live within 2 miles of their police station, and they couldn't leave city limits even on their day off. It was pretty bad. And ultimately, the economy had also the post-war economy. Cost of living had risen 73% in 1 year. So it was very similar. There's a lot of similarities to now. And they were just denied their rights. They were being paid the fair wage of 1903.
Did it have an impact on other cities?
Because
every police department looks at what's happening in another city.
It effectively killed the union movement, for the labor union movement, for several years in the United States. It did more damage than anything.
So the cops didn't win their fight.
Cops did not win their fight. We just blew the ending. Oh, no.
Well, I mean, people could look in the history books. It doesn't
exactly.
matter.
No, it doesn't.
People will read this book because of other reasons. In fact, that is something that I'm sure you were concerned about. And you've written all of these. You wrote detective stories and then two standalone crime novels. And now you have written a historical novel. Mm-hmm. Reviewers are calling it a departure. A historical novel, you don't have to worry as much about blowing the ending. But do you see it as a departure for yourself?
I see it as not 100% departure, hardly. I don't see it as a drastic departure, but I see it as definitely going and forging a slightly different direction. But again, I'm still concerned with very similar issues on the canvas in terms of social issues, in terms of an urban setting, et cetera. So I think it's fair, you know, I wanted to see what could happen if I could tell a big, old-fashioned, lusty, brawling epic.
Were your publishers surprised when you handed in the manuscript?
No, they knew.
They were
warned. They'd been watching the process for 5 years since I told them I was going to do it.
Because, you know, I'm sure that they understand that you are not a typical mystery writer, that you're somebody.
Oh, no, they've been great about supporting me in that regard.
There are a few people like Elmore Leonard who also is allowed a little more flexibility. But I know publishers are afraid when a writer who's established himself in one genre breaks out of the genre.
Well, I think normally that might be the case, except that I don't think that I had established myself in that way. Insofar as is, if you look at what I've established, I established that I wrote five Private Eye novels, and then I wrote Mystic River, which was a pretty large departure from that world, and then followed that up with a neo-Gothic, in Shutter Island, and then short stories in a play. I think I'm going by the you owe the audience the best work you can deliver. You don't owe the audience a recognizable cookie-cutter version of your work.
Well, there are three films. There was Mystic River, directed by Clint Eastwood, won two Oscars. Gone Baby Gone, directed by Ben Affleck, got great reviews. Mm-hmm. Didn't do as well at the box office, but it was a good film. Mm-hmm. And now there's Shutter Island, your most recent book, directed by Martin Scorsese. From Martin Scorsese, Mr. New York, this is his second Boston movie.
I wonder if there's something going on, something in the water. You know,
have you been involved in the productions in any way?
Yeah, it's been great. It's been wonderful.
But you don't write the screenplays.
I have nothing to do with the screenplays until we get to what I would call consultation, stage.
Would you want to? Because you did write several episodes of The Wire, as I said.
Right.
Earlier.
I do not. I will never ever write an adaptation of one of my books. It's for me. It would be like asking me to operate on my child. I don't know how other authors do it. My hats are off to them. I'm kind of in awe of it, but I can't do it. I just spent everything I had to make that book come in at the page length it came in at. So I'm not going to then turn around and try and trim that down to 135 script pages.
Yeah. Well, actually, short stories are always the ideal
they
for
really are.
Adaptation. When you have a novel this big, that's a whole other matter.
Yep.
By the way, Dennis Lehane will be speaking and signing books tonight at 7:30 at the Lincoln Square Barnes and Noble Store on Broadway at 65th Street. The book, The Given Day, is published by William Morrow. And as always, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
It's been great. Thanks so much, Leonard.